From listener-supported KTOO, welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Akwan and on demand as a podcast. It's Friday, March 29th, 2024. I'm your host, Andy Klein, recovering from a little bit of a cough, so excuse my voice today. Gunashish, thank you for joining the conversation. On today's show, tomorrow, local climbing gym, the Rock Dump, will have their annual fundraiser and the newest version of the Real Rock film. And the Alaska State Museum is here to chat about the special film screening this Saturday, marking the remembrance of the 60th anniversary of the 1964 Good Friday Alaska earthquake. CBJ Parks and Recs is here as well with the new recreation coordinator and info on summer camp registration. Those conversations plus music from Buddy Tabor and Sounds Wild, lots else coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon. First, a look at the weather, rain and snow showers in the forecast for this weekend, highs in the 40s and lows around freezing.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Akwan. The Kliné Di have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot once part of the Tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from these tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations.
Hands and grass, ka eat with the shu yi, we ka shuk a yi tin. Jin kat ka ke jin ta ka na kaya ha ane kak, gunish cheesh.
First up today on Juno Afternoon, a special treat, the Buddy Tabor Project, a group led by producer Justin Smith, is working to make available via streaming Juno music legend Buddy Tabor's musical catalog. The first album, Blinding Flash of Light, will drop during, of course, fittingly, Folk Fest. And yesterday, the first single from it was made available online. So check it out here. This is Buddy Tabor's Texas Blue Radio.
Was a little boy in the ranch lands of San Angelo. He'd sneak up in his room when his parents were asleep and listen to the radio. 50,000 watts of power coming at you all the way from New Orleans. In the days before rock and roll, when they played the blues low down and mean. Now he could hear those black girls singing underneath his covers at night. It opened up his eyes ever so wide to a brand new kind of light. Yeah, Patrick comes from Texas. He plays the blues on a Spanish guitar. He told me he once saw Mance Lipscomb in an Austin City bar. And how the legendary blues man could tear it up and rip holes in the night. Cause when Mance came to town to play the blues, it always dim the lights. They'd sing, sha la 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 la, in the middle of the night. Sha la 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 la, in the middle of the night. In the middle of the night, when the lights are low. In the middle of the night, there's nowhere to go. In the middle of the night, there's nothing to do. In the middle of the night, feel the power of the blues. You know, he had a motorcycle with a suicide clutch and a tank shift on the side. And sometimes he'd get on a great big Harley and go for a little ride. Way out there where that divine wind always blows across the road. And it was no surprise when he crossed the border and ended up in Mexico, where the people all spoke Spanish and the sound of it was sweet. So they take off your shoes and walk around barefoot in the street. Yeah, Patrick comes from Texas. He plays the blues on the Spanish guitar. He tell you no matter where you go, that's exactly where you are. He's half Jack Kerouac, half cowboy. Everything I tell you is true. He still played the blues the way they do back in 1932. They sing sha-la-la-la-la-la in the middle of the night. Sha-la-la-la-la-la in the middle of the night. In the middle of the night. When the lights are low, in the middle of the night. There's nowhere to go in the middle of the night. When there's nothing to do in the middle of the night. Feel the power of the blues. Texas, hot and dry. Texas, so hot you think you're gonna die. Texas, cornbread and beans, Texas. Come on, mama, let's do that southern scene.
It's Texas Blue Radio. That's Buddy Tabor. It's great to hear Buddy's voice again here on the airwaves of KTOO. And that's part of the full interview that's going to be happening was part of this project, the Texas Blue Radio and the Buddy Tabor project. You can go to KTOO.org/JunoAfternoon to hear a full interview from this week about that project with Justin Smith, who's kind of heading up that project. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO. KTOO, and I'm Andy Klein, and coming up next, we've got folks here from the Rock Dump to tell us all about the Real Rock Dump Festival. It's coming up. How are you guys doing?
Doing well.
Good.
How are you doing?
Good to see you. It's Alicia Fallberg and Jesse Palomino are here, and so tell me a little bit for those people who aren't familiar maybe with the film festival itself. It's something that's been happening for quite a number of years at the Rock Dump, but tell me a little bit about what people can expect to see.
Yeah, so the Real Rock is our kind of big annual fundraiser, and we bring up a film that's usually a compilation of a few different little tidbits of rock climbing from all over the world. So this year's we got a pretty cool lineup. We have some climbing from Japan with a three-time world champion, kind of venturing off away from the competition scene to pursue his adventures in the wilds.
So when you say competition, that's more like the rock wall, like what's at the Rock Dump? Competitions, yeah. Speed competitions, and what are sort of the different categories of competitions that happen with rock climbing?
Yeah, so on the international stage, there's three main disciplines of climbing. There's speed climbing, which is probably the easiest to follow. And then followed by that, there's the difficulty discipline. So one is sport climbing, which is done on a rope, clipping in as you go up, and you have about a 40-foot route to battle your way through difficult moves, jumps, and some tricks, whatever the route setter is going to throw at you. And then the last discipline is bouldering, which is smaller climbs, but a lot more intensive movement. So one of the things that you've been seeing kind of as time has progressed is it's getting a little bit like parkour. You'll see people kind of running across the wall doing these things called shadow walks and jumping from hold to hold and having to make a sequence of three or four different holds before they actually get to stop their body.
It's insect-like. I mean, what I've seen, it's amazing, really. What the real pros, right? It's incredible to watch. And I think some of it was in the Olympics, last Olympics. Is that right?
Yeah.
All three of those events?
Yeah. 2021 was the first climbing's first foray in the Olympics. So it was pretty cool. It was a combined format. So every discipline was tested for each climber, which ended up making for some pretty interesting results. This year, it was so well received that there's actually getting two medals. So there's going to be one for the difficulty disciplines, and then another one specifically for the speed discipline.
Speed stuff, yeah. What it is interesting when you say now. So then you take these people that train on these rock walls and become incredible, and then take that discipline and take it outside, right? Take it on the real terrain.
Yeah, it's a really cool transition that you actually has probably become more prevalent as competition climbing has grown, because you can only stay at the top for so long. So a lot of these athletes find themselves still itching for that desire to push their limits and stuff, and they end up taking it to real rock, and that's where you get to see some things that are really impressive.
Yeah.
Winning a competition on plastic is pretty neat, but when you can make the impossible look beautiful is a whole nother.
Yeah, that's cool. What are some of the other films that are going to be playing? I was looking at Alicia, but you're the one that knows the films. Okay, well, we'll go through those, and then we'll talk about sponsors and other ways people can get involved as well, Alicia.
Yeah.
Yeah, so another one of the films is going to be some deep water soloing in Spain, which is climbing big tall walls, but without any rope. But what you do have to catch is the ocean. So it's a really
What's going on? Yeah. Tell me more about this.
It's really outrageous. So just like we were talking about the sport climbing, where you're climbing these 40 to 100 foot walls, trying to do the hardest thing you can.
Right.
It's basically the same thing, except take away the ropes and throw a raging ocean under you and just go as far as you can.
And then if you fall, you're probably okay in the ocean.
Most of the time. It's still pretty precarious. Anytime you jump from,
it's a dangerous sport. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
wow.
It's a really cool, because what the film really is revolves around is the emotional experience of like the climbers as they first come to this totally foreign and terrifying arena of climbing to make it feel somewhat comfortable and be able to really push yourself.
Amazing. Wow. Very cool. Yeah. And then let's talk a little bit about the event itself.
Yes.
It's happening tomorrow, right?
Tomorrow. Yeah. Tomorrow, Saturday at Centennial Hall. Doors open at 6 and the movie will start at 7. But if you get there early, we will have a lot of prizes for offer. As you noted, this is our biggest fundraiser of the year for the gym. And we've got awesome local sponsors that gave us a bunch of cool things to give away. So such as Coastal and North Star, both helicopters. A lot of climbers in the community get excited about those because they can take them up to the Mendenhall Towers, get a heli drop up there. Alaska Seaplanes donated, Wings Airways, Kindred Post, Copa, Alaska Robotics donated a really fun graphic novel about rocks.
That's cool.
NAO and Foggy Mountain. We have beer from Alaskan Brewing. So, yes, we will be serving alcohol. We also have an area for under 21s. Okbe Yoga, Barnacle, a local painter, M.K. McNaughton, painted a beautiful landscape of Squamish in British Columbia, which is a popular climbing destination. And then we've got some bigger sponsors, Black Diamond, REI, Metolius, and La Sportiva all gave us stuff to give away.
Wow,
so,
cool.
Exciting prizes.
Is this film part of like a circuit? This film's doing, so that's this real rock thing goes to different locations, and that's where those bigger sponsorships kind of come along with that tour sort of the film. Is that kind of how it goes?
I mean, yes and no. We do reach out to some of these bigger sponsors to particularly give items for our event as donations, and
they respond.
Yeah.
That's great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Great relationship builder too, you know, to kind of have that a little bit, just be able to talk to Sportiva or whoever, you know, like that's cool. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit more about what's happening at the Rock Dump year round. I mean, this is the big kind of feature, and we'll recap this in a minute as well. But what are some of the programs happening at the Rock Dump that maybe, you know, people maybe don't know about, or maybe you want people to know about?
Yeah. So we have a kind of a series of revolving programs that are kind of always in the works. Right now we have Ladies Night going on Wednesdays. And then come summertime, we'll be getting into a little bit more adult programming, trying to do some more training oriented evenings for folks to climb at. And then should we get everything lined up, we'll definitely be looking at getting some of the kids programs rolling again.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And then tell me about what this, it's a fundraiser for the Rock Dump. Is the Rock Dump a nonprofit?
We
is
are.
How it's set up?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just didn't quite know that.
The nonprofit is Juno Climbing and Recreation that runs the gym.
Yeah, cool. And so what are the funds kind of, what's on your list of the funds of what they go towards, you know, like improvements, new routes, new things, stuff like that?
Yeah. So most of the stuff that we get from Real Rock is things that are tangible and that people will be able to touch like in the gym. So last year we bought a bunch of workout equipment and stuff to kind of cater to those folks that are trying to train a little bit for their rock climbing and just general fitness things. And then this year we're looking to get some re-up on our hold inventory. One of the things that happens in a commercial climbing gym is that we're always turning over the routes. So if you come in, you might have a route that you were really interested in, but 2 weeks later it might be gone. But in order to make them stay fresh and exciting, we kind of need the new holds to come and roll.
But I can see
rotation.
working on it. You almost got it. You go back the next day. Where's the route?
Oh, yeah. The route setter's curse.
You're right. Yeah.
I like to think that it's probably one of their small joys.
Yeah. Right.
Got them. Now you got a new one.
Right.
But yeah, we're really excited to re-up on that and just bring some more variety into the gym. We have almost all of our holds on the wall, which is fairly rare for us. So we definitely are in need and looking forward to.
Do they wear out?
They do wear out over time. The texture will come off.
Yeah.
We have a few relics in the gym that are pretty sweet, but they are definitely slippery.
Oh, yeah.
They'll get a little bit hard
on
to
purpose, kind of. Like, uh-oh. Yeah, maybe it's in the.
Oh, that's the new one.
The moss covered rock. Yeah. Maybe moss is a good thing. I don't know.
Really keep things Juno-esque.
Yeah, that's right. All right. Well, let's talk a little bit more about the fundraiser that's coming up tomorrow night. Once again, it's, well, let's go through the details one more time. It's happening at Centennial Hall.
Yeah, tomorrow, Saturday. Centennial Hall, 6 p.m. doors. Tickets will be available at the door. They're $20 in advance. So if you still want to get them today, you have that opportunity at the gym. But they'll be $25 at the door. Doors at 6. And then from 6 to 7, we'll be
Beer garden, fun,
looking at
people,
all the prizes,
right.
Seeing if you're going to win. We'll start the movie at 7. And at intermission of the movie is when you'll find out if you won any of the prizes. With your ticket, you do get entered right away into a door prize. So your chances are pretty good there to at least win something, if not one of the big things.
Yeah. Well, it's always a fun night. I've gotten to go to a few of them through the years, and it's always a really cool thing and a great crowd of people. People who are like interested in seeing these things, always like terrific people to hang out with. So once again, beer garden happening, but it's for all ages. There's an all ages section as well. And it's at Centennial Hall. It's the Rock Dump's annual showing of the newest Real Rock climbing film. And it's a joint gym fundraising event happening, starts tomorrow at 6 at Centennial Hall, and $25 at the door, but $20 right now online. Mm-hmm. Where do they go online?
It's not online.
Oh,
I think at the gym.
Got
to go to the gym.
Very physical, in person, happening. Okay, very good. Well, Alicia and Jesse, thanks so much for coming in, letting us know about it and talking about all the stuff that's happening at the Rock Dump. Appreciate talking to you.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay,
thank
coming
you.
Up next, we're going to hear a little bit from Sounds Wild. This is all about moose.
Sounds Wild. Hi, I'm Riley Woodford for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
On a snowy winter day, a big cow moose is trudging down the shoulder of a Kenai Peninsula highway. A calf is behind her. The driver of an approaching car spots the pair and slows down, flashing her hazard lights as she passes to alert other drivers of the hazard. When snow gets deep, moose find that plowed roadways offer easier access than backcountry trails. This puts them in danger from cars and puts people in danger from moose and vehicle collisions. In 2023, about 520 wildlife-involved crashes were reported to the Alaska State Troopers. In the previous years, there were even more, close to 670 collisions. In recent decades, about 240 moose per year were killed on Kenai roads. About half of all moose collisions involved calves. Calves killed by cars means there are fewer moose available for future harvest. Killing cows on the highway reduces the production of future calves. The darker conditions in the shorter winter days makes this even worse. When visibility is bad, slow down. Keep an eye out for moose, and if you see a moose, warn other drivers by flashing your hazard lights. For Sounds Wild, I'm Riley Woodford.
Music there from the Buddy Tabor project, and that's being spearheaded up by Justin Smith, and you can find out more about that by going to kto.org/JunoAfternoon, and you can read a full interview all about that project of the late great Buddy Tabor. Well, I'm being joined right now in Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K. I'm your host, Andy Klein, and joining me right now is Damon Stubner from the Alaska State Museum. Damon, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
And a fascinating film that you're showing about probably maybe the most significant event in modern Alaska history, with the Good Friday earthquake, as it's known.
Yeah, certainly would be one of the most significant ones.
Yeah.
It is really interesting how these events tend to define who we are as Alaskans.
Yeah, that's true. So this film. Tell me a little bit about the film itself. This is a historic film that captures a lot of the footage of the immediate aftermath of the earthquake. Tell me a little bit about the background of the film and what the film is about.
The film is called Though the Earth Be Moved. It is very much a typical educational film from that time period. It was produced in 1965 by the United States Civil Defense Agency, which at that time was under the Department of Defense. Now it's under Homeland Security. I love the film as far as telling the story of the earthquake. A lot of these educational films from the time period are very cut and dry. We do have films about the earthquake that pretty much talk about the science of the earthquake, but this one really talks about how it was a human event. It talks about what happened before the earthquake and pretty much gives out the timeline of the emergency response up to for like the 72 hours afterwards.
Well, tell me a little bit from what you've seen and what you've your other research, but tell me a little bit about the timeline of the earthquake. What was happening? What were people up to? What time of day was it? That kind of stuff.
Well, it happened. It was like this time of the year. This past Wednesday, March 27th, was the 60th anniversary of the earthquake, kind of like where we are right now. And it's we were going into, if you're a Christian, going into the Easter holiday weekend. It occurred on Good Friday at 5:36 in the evening. So kind of like what people are doing today. They've
meeting
been
back home or
yeah, going,
getting ready to
yeah, going home.
Weekend,
yeah. Yeah, going getting home from work, going going to church in the evening, getting ready for the Easter plans, Easter dinner parties. And so this is,
of course, this is just 5 years after statehood.
This is just,
right?
Yeah.
So it's a time when I think America is probably more aware of Alaska than maybe it had
yes.
been. We, you know, came into the fold of one of the 50 states.
That's correct. Yeah.
Yeah. 49th state. Yes.
So, yeah. So at 5:36 PM, you know, and just north of Prince William Sound, a 9.2 earthquake.
9.2.
9.2.
What does that compare to historically when it comes to earthquakes?
It, from what I understand, it is the largest earthquake in North America and actually considered to be the second largest in the world. I mean, the largest in the world goes to the 1960 Chilean earthquake, which occurred in May of that year, and believe that's a 9.4. So this is certainly up there, and it caused a huge amount of damage all across the South Central region, Prince William Sound, all the way down through Kodiak, across Anchorage, just unbelievable damage.
It was damage, of course, if anyone has been to Anchorage Earthquake Park and all of that, and you know there was damage right through the center of town. But then tsunamis as a result as well.
The tsunami occurred just, in some cases, minutes after the original earthquake. From what I understand, there were some sections of the tsunami that reached almost over 200 feet high. I mean, it's just incredible, just the natural force that happened.
Yeah, Kodiak, especially, one of the very affected areas. And so tell me a little bit about why the State Library got involved with this film. Showing this film, did it do some restoration on this film as well?
Yes. I mean, this is a film that we have in our collections. We have a number of earthquake films in our collections. We actually, they're, to be honest, not a whole lot as compared to other historical events. But this particular film, as I said earlier, I do love it because of the timeline it rolls out. So starting this past fall and well into just only a few weeks ago, I've been actually rescanning a number of these films. We had scanned them before in standard definition. I went back and rescanned them in HD and 4K, as well as if the film had a narration, I redid the captioning, which took me a long time to do.
Yeah. Tell me about that process of you're essentially digitizing in a high definition format. A film. So what are some of the limitations and parameters that you're dealing with?
Well, basically you're dealing with the limitations of the material itself. I mean, it's analog to begin with. Trying to send it to digital does have its complications. There's also times where the films may be brittle. They may need to have lots of repair done on them prior to scanning. So oftentimes I will actually pull one of these films. We keep them in a refrigerator to keep the deterioration at a very slow, minimal pace. All these films are going to deteriorate, sadly, but if you refrigerate them, keep them cold, it certainly slows it down. When I pull one of these films out, I basically put it on my workbench and pretty much unwind it onto another reel, and I physically inspect it frame by frame.
Just slowly unwind it and look for stress marks, things like that, yeah.
Stress marks, places where there's weak splices, places where there's torn sprockets, I have to repair all of that. So it does become a little bit.
That's late. A manual. So so first in this interesting because in doing this digital, in making this digital format, you're actually doing a lot of manual work,
yes.
Right?
Yeah. And it actually does require manual work of like in some cases re-splicing the film where there's a weak splice or actually putting down new sprocket holes.
Yeah, right.
You know, there's a piece of tape that you place over it that's exactly the same shape as a sprocket hole, and that kind of fills it in. And then once you put it on the scanner, that's another interesting process too. I mean, it goes through a series of rollers on the scanner that are kind of sticky, and it helps those little sticky rollers help clean off surface dirt that I couldn't get off. And then it goes through another series of rollers that are wet. And that gives an even deeper cleaning. In some cases, that wet solution even temporarily fills in scratches and so forth. So what you're going to see tomorrow is actually a much cleaner copy than the last scan that we did with it 11, 12 years ago.
Is there consideration? Is this a black and white film?
This is black and white. Yeah.
Are there considerations when you're restoring films black and white versus color?
No. I treat it the same.
Really?
It the same way.
Yeah.
You're still going to see some places where there's heavy damage to the film. It is a 59-year-old film,
sure.
and these things have been shown many times over the years. As I said, it was an educational film.
So it's shown in classrooms.
It was the
film that went around and film day in the classrooms. I mean, I'm old enough to remember those days, setting up the projector and all that.
Yes,
stuff.
Aren't we all right?
Yeah,
aren't we both of us right?
Yes.
You know. So I mean, this is all an intensive process, and then redoing the captioning. A couple of years ago, we started doing captioning, both closed captioning and open captioning for these films. That can also be labor intensive. We had it captioned a number of years ago, but that was for our previous scan. And unfortunately, the captions did not match with this new scan. So we had to go back and redo that. In some cases, it's watching the film and making adjustments every few seconds and fixing.
And just dictating actual narration.
Yeah, wow, fixing pronunciations and spellings.
Sure.
And I mean, of course, you know, Alaska. The spellings of any given word is not necessarily exactly how it's spelled.
Yeah, so. That's right. Yeah. Well, that's really interesting stuff. When you watch this film, you say you really love this particular film. What were some of the areas that either surprised you or that you didn't know about or that sort of shocked you as far as some of the film footage that was being shown?
What's interesting about this film is it's a combination of both reenactments and actual news footage. But they blend the reenactments and the news footage together to the point where it's often hard to tell what is what. And that to me is amazing just in how they incorporated both to tell this story. And what was amazing to me watching it is just how really unprepared people were. Of course,
yeah.
You know, no one really imagined that a 9.2 earthquake would hit the Anchorage area.
How could you? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, now today, and a couple days ago, we had the tsunami warning.
Yeah.
You know, drill, but back then. And that was just amazing to me, just how everything just unfolded. The other interesting thing in this film is there was a ship that was actually at dock in Valdez when the earthquake struck. The ship actually managed to survive the tsunami.
Wow. When,
yeah, Valdez was pretty much.
What sort of ship?
It was a cargo steamship.
Okay, wow.
They were tied up. There's actually film footage of Valdez just minutes before the earthquake. One of the sailors aboard the cargo ship had their camera out with their old 8mm camera, and they were shooting people on the dock, kids, dogs playing, you know, longshoremen working.
That's incredible. Wow.
That is amazing. And then the footage that they shot of the tsunami coming in. And it's amazing that they that they saved the ship.
Yeah, incredible.
Another one of our films that we have in our collection is actually dealing with that ship. We have another film of the Admiral, the 13th Coast Guard, presenting the captain and the crew medals for saving their ship during the during the tsunami of the 1964 earthquake.
You also mentioned there was a Coast Guard vessel that got into Kodiak.
Yeah, this I learned well after the fact. There was a Coast Guard vessel that was out on patrol, and they managed to get into Kodiak to refuel, resupply, wow. and then went out to do...
Yeah.
Yeah, and that unfortunately is not in the film, but that was something I learned afterwards.
Right, right.
There was also something that I learned well afterwards, and that during the earthquake, there was a children's program that was aired. This was a science fiction program with puppets, and supposedly the scene right when the rocket was taking off, that's when the earthquake hit.
So the kids all thought, wow, the rumble of the rocket ship is what
yeah 10 years goodness. Ago I screened the same film out at the university for the 50th anniversary, and I had a great discussion with people afterwards, and that was one of the stories that someone had told about him watching this children's program as a little kid, just absolutely amazed by the house was shaking and the rocket was taking off.
That's incredible.
Yeah. last time when I showed it, it was very interesting. It was not the reactions I was expecting. When the film ended, there was silence for a long time. There was actually some people crying. So the film is very emotionally moving.
Especially for people who were there and lived through it. Yeah, definitely. Well, it is getting to that point of this film being 60th anniversary of the earthquake itself, where the generation of people that were experiencing it are no longer with us as much. And so I guess, yeah, you must have gathered a lot of that narrative 10 years ago. And hopefully there's people that I mentioned it to you. It's actually my birthday. It's the day I was born. So, I mean, here I am, an old 60-year-old man. And so it must be an amazing thing for people who were a little bit older than me that actually remember going through it.
I'm hoping I will have another good discussion afterwards. I would love to continue hearing these stories of people who either knew someone who witnessed it or actually lived through it. These stories are just amazing, and they just keep on going. And
yeah, well, let's talk about the details of actually seeing it. It's happening tomorrow, right?
At the
Alaska State Library Archives and Museum, and 2 p.m.
Yes,
yeah.
2 p.m. in the lecture hall.
And is it just free admission?
It is free admission.
Okay, great. And an amazing service by the museum, another great, amazing service by the museum. And happening 2 p.m. tomorrow. And you just go to the Andrew P., the APK, as they call it, building, and the Alaska State Library Archives and Museum right down here, right by the K2 building as well. Well, Damon, thanks so much for coming in and talking to us about it. It's fascinating to hear about this film. Are there other projects that you're kind of next online, maybe just a preview for us, things for people to watch for?
I'm sure there are.
Okay.
At the moment, I'm taking
all right.
a break.
Now, we'll concentrate on this. That's good. It's all about the Alaska Good Friday earthquake. Though the Earth Be Moved, it was an educational film done just a year after the earthquake. So, as you said, many of the recreations that they kind of did were of the same time period,
yes.
of the time and in the same setting. And
with the actual people who were involved.
Yeah, fascinating. And it's an all educational film about one of the most remarkable and meaningful events that happened in the history of Alaska. Happening tomorrow, 2 p.m. at the Alaska State Library. Damon, thanks so much for coming in and telling us about it.
Yeah, thank you, Andy.
All right, we're going to hear a little bit more now from Buddy Tabor. This is Flash of Light.
'60s came, the '60s went, for dreams of peace and love were spent. The right attacked, the left had died, the good Samaritan crucified. Jesus said to love your neighbor, but the rich got richer, wouldn't do you no favor. Now baby, ain't living right. Well, I'll be one of that blinding flashing light. Ronald Reagan headed to college. He took a chainsaw, clear cut the trees, sold a birthright to the Japanese. All we got was computers and TVs. Surfing on the internet, the things you've never found out yet. Drowned in the age of information, whistles withheld from a whole damn nation. Baby, ain't living right. Well, I'll be one of that blinding flashing light. Just as ain't blind, she can see the daylight of reality. How much a lawyer costs and the rich walk free. Ask OJ if you don't believe. You can get away with murder if you're a billionaire. When you got a lot of money, honey, nobody cares. Now, baby, ain't living right. Well, I'll be one of that blinding flashing light. This country's starting to remind me of pre-World War Germany. Feel the hate, the fear, no repentance. Got no mercy, got no tears. Lincoln rolls over in his grave. If he could see these Republican senators today, now baby, they living right. Well, I'll be one of that blinding flashing lights. They want to turn this country into Bosnia. NRA right-wing gun freaks take the blood of our precious children, turn around and spill it into the street. Masturbating with their gun while they're eating Soldier of Fortune. Now, baby, ain't living right. We'll all be one of that blinding flashing lights. The Russians sell nuclear arms to angry Islamic states. You turn around and tell me that there's hope. You spin back around and say it's not too late. Standing in the shadow of Armageddon. Judgment's waiting at the gates of heaven. Now, baby, ain't living right. Well, I'll be one of that light and flashing light. Mushroom cloud, death's bright shroud wraps around all of us now. The intensity of radioactive heat melts us right down to our feet. Our prophets that predict our doom walk around with a head full of gloom. Now, baby, ain't living right. We'll all be one of that blinding flash of light. The homeless population grows, multiplies, and then explodes in your face. Such a disgrace, you don't give them any place. So you take off for the shopping malls. Jesus is yelling at you in the halls. Now, baby, ain't living right. And you just maxed out your credit card last night. I'm an aging hippie in a trailer park where the streets are mean. You don't go out after dark. The kids out back are smoking crack. You don't ever make no eye contact. All God's children are carrying a gun. You better pick up your tennis shoes. You better run. Now, baby, ain't living right. We'll all be one in that blinding flash of light.
That's more Buddy Tabor there. That's Flash of Light, the title track of the album that's just getting released as part of a digital release project that's happening. You can find out more about that at ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon. There's a full interview with Justin Smith and the team that is helping put that all together. Very cool stuff. Well, coming up next, we're going to be talking to folks from the Juno Parks and Rec. And we have an exciting person in town. I think you're exciting. Ellen Johnston is here. Ellen is the new aquatic program coordinator, a position that I know that Tara Patterson here has been looking to get filled and excited about filling. So welcome to town, Ellen.
Thank
it's great to have
much.
You in Juno.
Yeah, I love being here.
Good, good. And you said you're kind of, you hail from all over Arkansas, Midwest. You even took an RV across country for the last few years. So you've really experienced a lot of communities and a lot of what America has to offer. Did you draw on that experience? And do you feel like you draw on that experience in order to think about putting together programs and those kinds of things?
Definitely, because you get to be part of a lot of different communities traveling around like that. So you see a lot of different programs offered in different places,
yeah,
and different special interests.
I'm sure it gives you you know, good creative ideas about things to do. Well, great. Well, let's get into business here. And Tara, I might ask you first to talk a little bit about the summer camp program that's happening.
Sure. Well, last summer we started a new summer day camp. We only did 3 weeks last summer. This summer we're going to offer 4. And the day camp is actually split in between the Diamond Park Aquatic Center and the Diamond Park Field House. So mornings, the first half of the day are spent at the pool. We do swim lessons with them and then also some really cool programs. Ellen's going to talk a little bit more about that. And then in the afternoons, they go over to the field house and they get to do, you know, things over there.
And at the end of the day, they're worn out.
They are.
I love it.
Each day is a different theme. So
swimming, yeah. All of it. Yeah. Yeah. Swimming, especially when you're a kid, there's so much energy that you have to expend. And it just feels like the pool is a perfect place.
And then when they go to the field house, they take them outside when the weather's nice and
totally, yeah.
Do, you know, just get outside, play, do a little bit of hiking or walking around trails. I don't know if I'd call that hiking.
Yeah. Well, you know, yeah.
But yeah, so we have some really exciting themes and activities planned for that. Maybe Ellen wants to talk a little about that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, we'll definitely be bringing back some of the more popular ones from last year. Like the Nature Day where kids get a chance. We have one of our camp people is a former nature guide here locally in Juneau. So she's just a fountain of knowledge and the kids love all of that. Some additional offerings this year, we're going to have a circus themed day where kids get to come in and do some face painting and learn some different circus skills.
Maybe some juggling.
Some juggling.
You are a former professional juggler.
Yes,
you were telling
correct.
Me. That's such a, mm-hmm. That's an amazing thing to have on your resume.
Oh, well, it was a lot
right.
of fun.
Where did you do that?
All over, mostly North America.
Yeah, right. That's amazing.
Yeah.
So you can, that's a fun just area of expertise to bring to kids and at least start them on skills of it and show them that. And
absolutely.
Of course, what child doesn't love watching that sort of happen? It's like magical.
And well, people have an idea about juggling that it's more difficult than any other skill to learn, which is great for us jugglers.
Right.
You know, but as someone who teaches juggling, I like to tell people that it's just like any other skill. You start at the beginning and the teaching method that I use is accessible even to tiny little kids who aren't ready to learn how to juggle all the way across the spectrum. So don't worry if you don't feel already coordinated or it'll definitely be something fun activities to learn.
Yeah, that's
from.
Really cool. That's really cool. What a fun new thing to think about. Having a bunch of kids in Juneau figuring out how to juggle.
Yeah.
It's really fun.
So in addition to the juggling, we'll have some hula hooping and some spinning plates, and there'll be some demonstrations. There will be a different theme each day of the camp with different fun activities split, again, between the pool and the field house.
Yeah, so. Really cool. That's great. Well, tell me a little bit about, you know, just we'll talk more about the sort of specific programs. And I should mention that these program, the details of this camp, where can people find out about that?
They can go on to junopools.org or they can go on to the main Parks and Recreation website.
Right.
I think it's probably important to mention that the registration opens on Monday at noon. And last year, these camps did fill up rather quickly. We have 15 spots for each camp each week. And we actually we aren't allowing people this year to sign up for more than one camp. It's kind of the same thing 4 different times. And that way we can allow more kids in the community to come in and participate in the program.
Yeah. So it ends up serving 60 kids instead of repeat.
Exactly.
Yeah, right. Well, that's
exactly.
Great.
Yeah.
You were giving a little bit of a preview that you're going to be introducing another fun thing that's coming in May.
Yes.
As well.
We have diving lessons that we're going to be offering at Diamond Park Aquatic Center. We have lessons for both beginners and advanced divers. So if you've never dived before, but you think it sounds like fun, this could be for you. A lot of the skills are sort of similar to what you would learn in a gymnastics springboard. we'll be working on different ways to flip and twist in different directions, proper approach and takeoff, air control and water entries. But again, don't be intimidated by any of that. It is definitely a come start at the beginning. If you've ever been interested in dance team, cheerleading or stunting, gymnastics, jumping on a trampoline, if you're just curious, it's a great new program and we encourage everybody to come check it out.
Diving is such a cool thing, but it is intimidating, isn't it? You know, to make that first thing, just going out on the diving board. You know, I remember as a little kid, just even walking out on the diving board is a little scary.
That's why it's such a great opportunity to have a professional instructor to help, you know, beginning to end. And it can really demystify it and make it seem a lot less daunting when you have that instructor right there.
And what are our diving facilities in Juneau? Do we have like a platform facility? Do we have just a springboard?
No platforms. Yeah. Just the diving boards at both of the pools. Spring. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think
maybe cliffs out the road, you know.
That's not going to be part of our program. But you know, it is a sport that is offered through the high school, and I think a lot of people don't even realize it's kind of an afterthought, or they don't realize that it's something you can do outside of the swim team.
And it's diving is such an amazing sport. It, as you were saying, it combines so many elements of movement and artistry, but also, you know, real athleticism and coordination. So it's kind of an amazing sport.
Absolutely. Yeah. A couple of relevant details. This program will be running on Tuesday and Thursday evenings, beginning on May 14th, and it'll run through June. There'll be the beginning of June. There'll be 8 sessions. It is available to anyone over the age of 8.
Oh, okay.
And we anticipate that registration for this will open on May 1st. So stay tuned.
Now this is for adults as well?
In theory, yes.
But are adults. You sort of more targeting young people?
We're not setting a maximum age.
Okay.
So it is definitely possible for adults to join as well. If you have never done anything with diving before, you'd want to go to the beginner class.
Yes, I would think so.
The intermediate/advanced class follows it directly. And we anticipate that will probably be more people who have participated in the high school dive team, or, you know, people obviously who have some experience, rather than just getting on the diving board during our open swims and jumping off.
Yeah, right. I've done that. But
that might not qualify you as an advanced diver.
I'm pretty good at both the can opener and the cannonball.
Oh, okay.
So that's pretty much it. Well, that's great. And it's so good to meet you, Ellen. Ellen, are there other kind of things that I'm sure you've got a whole bunch of stuff that you're excited about starting, but are there any other things that you're thinking about kind of targeting in the next little bit here, or what are some of the goals that you have to bring to the aquatic centers?
Well, I absolutely have some ideas. I would not want to announce anything before we have a program built out. However, one of the things that I've been thinking about is that we have fantastic event room facilities at the pool. Those can be rented out for birthdays, but we also have a variety of classes that we can offer there. At the moment, we have chair yoga happening. I see that as a little bit of an underutilized space, and I'm hoping to find a few more offerings in those rooms. So if you have something that you teach that you think would fit well with our facility and our programming, please feel free to reach out to me. You can just call down to the pool and they'll connect you with me. And
that's great. That's a great tip. And I'm sure there are people out there that have that kind of in their back of their head that they'd like to have a program of some sort. Is it something that you would want to be targeted more towards an athletic activity, or just kind of have an open mind to whatever people might propose?
Well, I'm excited to hear if the community brings me ideas. I'd love to hear any of them. My initial thoughts were something athletic, but this could range from meditation to some kind of educational opportunity. We are an athletic facility, so ideally it would tie in some way.
But sure. Yeah.
We are open to ideas.
Well, it's great to think about that, how these buildings have these great resources within them, not just the pool themselves, but also these other great resources that are part of the whole facility.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's very cool.
The other thing Ellen will be working on quite a bit is swim lessons. And we know how much Juno loves swim lessons.
Yes.
And
there's
we need
demand.
More.
Yep.
So we are anticipating that we're going to be offering a class for swim instructors before summer. And we definitely would love to hire more swim instructors, because you can only put so many little 3 and 4 year old bodies with one instructor. On that note, I did also want to mention that we, our next round of swim lessons for the Augustus Brown Pool will be starting April 29th, and our registration date for that session will be April 19th. So parents, mark your calendars if you'd like to do swim lessons at the downtown pool.
Okay. And just call the pool for more information on that, or go online as well?
Yes. Yeah. We should have everything as far as what class levels and times into on the website where people can see it but not register for it around April 17th. But again, the 19th will be the date
Great.
That people can register.
Well, so glad to meet you, Ellen, and so glad to see you again as well, Tara. And thanks for coming in and telling us all about what's happening at CBJ Pools. Anything else we left out that we should mention?
Well, so nice to meet you.
Yes.
And just keep an eye on our online catalog and our offerings. And we are excited to hopefully bring you some more new and exciting things soon.
Well, you'll find that Juno is absolutely connected to its pools and loves them. And as you were saying, there's so much demand for the services that the pools have. It's such a great part of living here and growing up here is being able to utilize the pool facilities. So, Ellen, thanks so much for coming in, and great to have you here, and welcome to Juno. And for any more information that people need on that, you can go to the CBJ site and look up the pools, and you'll find out more information there. Thanks to both of you for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Well, that's going to do it for Juno Afternoon today, broadcast live on KTOO 104.3 FM, online at kto.org, and rebroadcast on this station at 7 o'clock. For more info on the show or to listen to past shows, you can go to kto.org/JunoAfternoon. Boston Christopher is our producer, and we had help today from Aaron Tripp. Theme music is by Indian Agent. And I'm Andy Klein, your host for today. Thanks so much for joining us here. Have a great weekend.